Thank you so much. So I can categorize my life in many ways. In regards to comparisons, there are many befores and afters. Events that changed everything about my life. Puberty, college, Unitarian Universalism, the call to ministry. But perhaps the biggest material event that changed everything has been my move from Tennessee to California. It's hard to even think about my life before living here, and it's weird because I've only lived here for 5 years. I'm 32 years old, which means that roughly 27 years of my life were spent not here, and yet being here has changed absolutely everything about my life. In my previous adult life, I was a social worker. My dream was to become a licensed therapist of some sort, and becoming a therapist had been my only career goal. From the time I was 14 years old to when I filled out my application at Star King School for the Ministry, I lived, breathed, and was practically obsessed with all things psychological. Those of you who work in that field, you know that without an advanced degree, such as a master's or above, you can't really do much in the therapy world. So at the bachelor's level, many of us turn to unlicensed social work before we can get our advanced degrees. And it's hard. And I loved it. I loved every underpaid, overworked hour of it. So for half of my professional social work career, I was working as a mental health case manager. I worked with socioeconomically marginalized individuals and families, doing a mix of mental health, court advocacy, resource linkage, and general support. So I worked in rural East Tennessee. I worked in the counties, in some of the poorest counties in East Tennessee, and so most of my clients were poor and white. Many were recipients of inadequate educational resources. This paired with the overwhelming opiate epidemic in the southeastern U.S. meant that many of my clients were comorbid. This means that they had more than one diagnosis and that each diagnosis played on the other. Their poverty increased their bipolar symptoms, which weren't properly treated because they had low access to health care, which often was avoided because their living situation would cause concern for health professionals who may call the state to remove their children. And it's been this way for generations. This is generational poverty, which is actually an incurable diagnosis in the United States. And it was in this environment that I was called to ministry. Because it was in this environment that I learned that there is so much more to people than their labels, their categories, what you see when you look at them. I was working in these communities during 2012, the presidential election. And let me tell you, these people hated Barack Obama. These people criticized all things liberal. They criticized welfare, even though they were on welfare. They hated anything in that category. And although I was not working with them through this most recent election, I can firmly guess who these folks voted for and why. And I'll tell you this. These folks cooked for me. They cared for me. They let me into their homes. I'm a black woman, and at the time, I had long, multicolored braids. I wore a badge. I worked for the enemy. Most of these folks, they didn't like social workers for a lot of reasons, and they didn't like any outsiders, regardless of what they looked like, and yet, there I was. And they welcomed me because I let them be more than their court case. I let them be more than their socioeconomic status. I let them be more than their educational level or their political leanings. And they let me be more than my skin color or my long braids or my badge. And if you had asked either of us separately, we would have shared views and opinions in direct contrast to one another. But for 1 hour a week, I was in their home, front seat to their pain and their sheer humanity, and we saw each other in our fullness. This month, our worship theme is balance. And what better way to examine balance than to engage imbalance? And we can use the concept of binaries to do this. Now, by binary, I'm not referring to computer code. I'm referring to socially constructed understandings of the world that typically place us at either end of a spectrum: rich, poor, liberal, conservative, masculine, feminine, just to name a few. These binaries are so pervasive that we barely notice all the ways in which they affect us in everyday life. How we make sense of the world, how we see others, how we even relate to ourselves is seen through binaries. And these binaries are incredibly powerful. So powerful, in fact, that if we dare to defy these constructs, we become problematic. So one particular binary of interest is the gender binary. The gender binary supposes that at either end of the binary lies masculine or feminine, and that we all need to somehow fit into one of these constructs. But that's not all. The unspoken rule of that binary is that we present traits, characteristics, and roles fitting to our category, but that's not all. That binary demands that our bodies match up with the category that we fall in, meaning that, according to that binary, our gender is determined at birth. It's not up to us. So, if you easily fit into one and only one category on that binary, and you present as such, and your body matches up, then you're fine. But if those demands aren't met completely, it becomes a problem. Now, that's the real destructive power of binaries. It forces us into categories and asks us to perform as such. It pulls us away from the fullness and the truth of who we are, and it allows for others to label us and for us to label others. 2018, possibly one of the most polarized periods within my lifetime and probably many others. Nationally, globally, socially, and culturally, we are witnessing the death rattle of normativity, and it ain't pretty. As more and more folks come into their own, as more people decide to define themselves outside of social constructs, as more of us demand a seat at the table, we are witnessing extreme suppression and pushback. And oh, the opinions and the debates and the debebates about the opinions and the opinions about the debates. Trials by public opinion is a very real occurrence, and a candidate has dictated everything. And while advances in communication technology allow for us to be empowered and to empower others, it also exposes us to this nasty and harsh world in which we can't come together on anything. Nothing is too vile. Nothing is too soon or too sacred. And ignoring the advice of any sane person, I read the comments. I do. I don't know why. There's something about the dreaded comment section that I'm drawn to. And sometimes it's unbelievable what I read. Who are these people, I ask? What kind of lives do they lead? How could they even love anyone with the filth that they are putting out into the world? But what I notice when I look beyond that is we're all spiraling towards this great cultural question right now. The question that I'm seeing. The question that has our feathers ruffled. The question we haven't asked ourselves as a whole. Which is, what kind of people are we going to collectively be? Which begs another question. Who are we now? That normative death rattle suggests that the answer would be simple. We fit into our categories, our labels are clear and accurate, and we are not a threat to the status quo. It plays on tradition. It plays on family values, the way things were back when things were good and simple. Now, of course, the most basic historical research will unravel that myth in 1 minute flat. It was never that simple, or good, or easy, but myths keep constructs alive. And these myths and constructs, they don't just happen on one side. They don't just happen on one end of the spectrum. It's comforting to think that progressively minded people have moral superiority, but no one is exempt from society. We have our markers as progressives. We have our measuring tools to determine what somebody else's label means. But to use the language from the earlier reading, are these fake fights? Not fake issues. The issues are obviously real, but is that really what we're warring over? Or is it something deeper, something more urgent, something lingering, like, who are we? Who are we going to become? Now, don't get me wrong, this isn't a call for unity or reaching across lines. That's another sermon for another day. Nor is this about shattering stereotypes, although we could always use more of that. What I'm getting at is, what is at stake when we limit ourselves and those around us to our respective ends of the binary, any binary? What opportunities for connection and understanding are lost? In terms of our growing social conflict, how can we face the myriad of challenges without understanding that under the labels and under the rhetoric and under the ideology, under the fake fight, there is a real question at hand, one that we can only answer when we recognize the humanity of one another. This isn't simply about movements. This isn't simply about what's happening on the surface right now. There's something brewing much larger than all of us. And if we can't be who we fully are, there's no way that we can face the challenges that we know are coming. And so it is in our individual lives, in our families, and in our communities. When I let go of the markers of who I am based on what I'm supposed to be, I begin to shed the labels. I don't have to fit into anyone's box, not even my own. What freedom that is. There's no supposed to be in the way of my authentic and organic being. Suddenly, I'm allowed to change and to be fluid and to move into my fullest self, to be things I didn't even think I could be. Our families no longer have to look a certain way or contain a certain set of roles to be defined as family. Our communities can meet the needs of our changing world and lives, and it's okay for our communities to transform and to change. The great question of who are we? Who are we going to be? It's not defined by one group of people when we live off of the binary. It's not defined by one standard way of being. And that's when we really get to experience the fullness of each other. When we accept the gift of grace, that there is so much more to each of us than our political leanings, or our dietary preference, or our abilities, or our gender, or our economic status. That who we are and who we are going to be is a living and breathing question that is answered when we live and breathe into the fullness of each moment. And when we can move off the binaries and we can shed the labels and allow others to do the same, we become rooted in our truth with a capital T. And from this place, we can do the work of justice, the work of love. Because in our fullness, we become love and we become life, wholly and completely. May it always be so. Amen and blessed be.